to the Toffee Blues, your source for all things Everton, and welcome to an exclusive Toffee Blues interview with it today. It's an absolute pleasure for me to be joined by former Everton and Canada international striker, Tomas Radzinski.
How are you?
I'm great, thank you, Tomas. It's a real pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much for coming on, and a very warm welcome to the Toffee Blues. How are you? You're staying home at the moment, staying safe?
Well, you know, like everybody, I guess. I mean, I hope anyways. I'm trying to restrict my movements to the garden and you know, to the grocery shops. And that's pretty much it. I mean, it's a terrible thing that's happening right now all over the world. I mean, I even had to cut my honeymoon short from New Zealand and Pacific Islands. Me and my wife, we are kind of 18 years together, and after having kids, we decided to go on a honeymoon, and we had to cut it short just after one day. I mean, we basically arrived in New Zealand, and they told us nothing is going to go through, so we flew back with a very nice.
Such a shame.
It is a shame, but that means, you know, we're serious about it as well. We want everything to stop as soon as possible, and this is the reason why we decided to go home. And actually stay home, stay safe, and then hopefully everybody's doing the same thing a little bit. Every little bit helps to keep it contained, and hopefully it's going to be over soon, because I'm guessing you all Toffees are wanting to go to the stadium again and watch football.
Definitely.
And the longer we stay at home, I'm guessing the quicker it's going to be contained, and the quicker we can go and enjoy football again.
That's it. I think everybody's got to do their bit. It's great to hear that you're staying safe, your family's staying safe, and the same goes for me at my end as well, mate. So, fair play to you. Of course, moving on to the show, Tomas is a player I have very fond memories of watching in the very early stages of my time supporting Everton. He had a three-year spell, 2001 to 2004, 101 appearances and 26 goals for the Blues. Firstly, we're going to go right back to the beginning of your career. You started professionally in Europe, in Belgium, with Ekeren in 1994. You grew up in Poland, Germany and Canada before those 11 years separately in Belgium, four with Ekeren, three with Anderlecht, and four towards the end of your career with Liège. So clearly you settled very well in Belgium. As we can see right now, you live there, don't you?
Well, I settled pretty much anywhere very well. I mean, even in Liverpool, I settled pretty well, just because probably I've been moving since my very young years from one country to another, from one culture to another. So it was quite difficult in the first 2 to 3 months, I'm not going to lie to you, to actually understand the Liverpool accent. But
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, but you know, after listening to Duncan Ferguson afterwards speaking his dialect, it was quite easy.
So. Oh, yeah, Duncan Ferguson is his Scottish accent.
Yeah, but one of the more difficult ones, if I have to say. But yeah, right now, you know, I started my career, my football career in Belgium, in Ekeren, and I live actually only 10 minutes away from Ekeren right now. So it's one of those countries where it's actually stuck to my heart. My wife is from here. My kids were born here. I have three daughters right now, 11, 8, and 6-year-old. So they are still fairly young, but they're all born in Belgium. So I think it's going to be another few years staying here in the region of Antwerp.
And I don't see any reason why you should move. It's a lovely place to live as well, I'd imagine.
Well, the girls, the ladies, they love it because we have the best chocolate. And the lads love it too, actually, because we have more than 400 sorts of beer. So I'm guessing there's going to be enough connoisseurs that would like to come in Belgium and live here.
Oh, certainly. And no wonder you settle so well.
Well, no, I'm more a wine drinker and I don't need chocolate, so.
Oh, well, at least the girls are happy.
Yeah, definitely they are, yeah.
So let's not forget that shortly before joining Everton, you impressed greatly in Europe with Anderlecht. You scored twice to beat Man United, as well as scoring against Lazio later on in that tournament. So some very impressive showings in Europe and in the Belgian League for you, enough to convince Everton to make an offer for you. You signed for Everton from Anderlecht in July 2001 for $4.5 million. So we'll start from there. How did the move to Everton come about?
Well, it was this very good Champions League show from my side in that season, and there was lots of interest from Spanish clubs actually, but I was not really keen into really moving into the Spanish competition. I thought the Premier League was something that would suit my my style of play a little bit better. I mean, I was not the most skillful player out there, but I was very rapid, very very quick off the mark, and I thought the Premier League would be just a perfect just a perfect competition for me. So after getting a phone call via from Walter Smith, he was the coach, the gaffer at that time at Everton. You know, it went quite fast from there. I wanted to leave Anderlecht at that time, and Everton showed lots of interest. And after also speaking to Alan Ball during the summer, we were doing some commercial for, I believe, the PlayStation or whatever it was. He was telling me that Everton is probably the best club in all of the UK when it comes to the fans. And he told me, you don't have to be the best player out there, you don't have to be the most skillful, but as long as you're going to give 110% every single game, they're going to love you. And this is something that actually gave me a push as well to consider Everton and actually sign and choose Everton at the end of it. So many little things contributed to me signing to Everton, and I have not had any regrets since.
Fantastic. Just on the note of when you signed in 2001, which other clubs were interested? Which Spanish clubs and anybody else?
Well, the biggest one was Valencia at that time, and they were quite big in the year 2000. So, I don't know exactly. I mean, there's also lots of agent talks. Valencia, I know, is a very very solid one, but the rest, you know, agents talk, and they try to make your head a little bit crazy, so you make a decision based on maybe some fiction more than facts. So, well, I just know Valencia was there, and there's a few other clubs that probably was more of an imagination of the agent rather than the actual facts. So I rather don't mention them because...
I think we can get have a little guess anyway.
Yeah, it would be too high for my level, I'm guessing, anyway.
I have a funny feeling who you're going to say. But, yeah. Of course, I remember you saying in a programme, an official Everton programme, quite recently, that you didn't actually have an agent of your own, did you?
No, I did not. Actually, the move came through the clubs, and only the Anderlecht, they have put an agent in place to actually do the deal, because apparently it was necessary to have an agent to make a move, which I didn't know at the time. But you know, I was just glad that I could go to the Premier League and I could perform every week, week in, week out, in massive stadiums, you know, in a fans that are sitting right next to the pitch. It was just an unbelievable experience for me, and it was kind of playing the Champions League every single week rather than, you know, waiting for it to come at the end of the season, hopefully after winning the league, you know, or qualifying for it. So it was it was quite nice.
Of course, when you first joined the season before, we were in a relegation fight. What did Walter Smith tell you about the club before joining, or when you joined, and what was expected?
Well, the expectations are as usual. You know, you come as a striker, so they expect you to score goals, to actually get as early as possible out of the relegation fight, and then, you know, the compactness of the Premier League makes it so wonderful that you know, if you win 2-3 times in a row, you actually fighting for the European places and Champions League places, since there are so many Premier League teams who have been always qualifying for the European leagues. So, and then you lose 3 games in a row, and you actually get stuck in the back of the table, and you're fighting for relegation. So it's, you know, the task was simple. Come, make an impression and start scoring goals. And unfortunately, somewhere around November, I got injured, and I did not recover until it was too late, where Walter Smith has been sacked at that time, and David Moyes arrived. And I believe that was beginning of February of 2002.
Pretty close. I think it was the March, because of course he did come back in February. You scored against Liverpool actually just before he got sacked, so you didn't do too badly.
Yeah, that was the most goals ever. I think I touched my knee, my shin, and my big toe to go in, so it wasn't beautiful, but it was important.
I'm sure the fans didn't complain.
No, I didn't complain either.
Of course, you scored before all that. You scored on your full debut against West Ham, and at that point, we were up the top end of the table, and you scored in a 5-0 win. Kevin Campbell scored as well. How did it feel scoring that first goal for Everton? And did you have a good relationship with Kevin Campbell?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we were quite close with Kevin, with Thomas Gravesen and Alessandro Pistoni. So that was from my point of view, obviously. And me living in Liverpool itself, in Sefton Park, it was. That's where I lived. And all the boys, they actually moved away from Liverpool, and I believe they were living in the area close to Manchester. So from time to time, I did travel up to Manchester just to visit them. Sometimes we went into the Trafford Center, do some shopping, and just you know, have a different view of life, and something more relaxed at Manchester. But yeah, Kevin was a very good friend, not only on the pitch but off the pitch as well, and I have fond memories of him. And well, he being the captain as well for the Toffees at that time made it extra special.
Of course, it's always good to get on well with the club captain, and we mentioned some strong characters there. And I heard you on an older podcast called Team 33, and you said that you were very close with Tommy Gravesen, weren't you?
Yeah, well, he was one of the very few guys who lived in Liverpool, and actually lived in the centres in Beetham Plaza, so it was quite easy to hook up with Tommy, because we would go for lunch together. We would then we would go to his place, play some billiards, and yeah, it would be. We were quite close until the moment he moved to Real Madrid. We kept in contact quite a lot, so it was fun. Since then, all but lost with Tommy. I really have no idea where he is right now. I've been following his career since a little bit, but I have no idea what he's doing right now. Whether or not he's still alive, also,
I'm pretty sure he became a professional poker player or something. He went to Las Vegas. I'm sure he did. Yeah, I'll have to check on that, but I'm sure that's what he did.
Well, then, good luck to him. I mean, you need luck with poker, I'm guessing.
Definitely needs luck, but I'm pretty sure he's done pretty well. He's he might have gone pro, I'm not too sure.
All right, well, excellent. Might have to visit him in Vegas.
Definitely. Like you say, he's one of the most interesting characters in that squad while you were there, but there was a few others as well. Duncan Ferguson, Gazza, Abel Xavier. Is there any other funny or mad stories that you could bring us from any of those guys?
Well, Gazza with Xavier, with Abel, it was fantastic because they were my neighbors. Oh, yeah. Well, I just I'm not sure people want to listen to those, or maybe I'm actually not sure I can disclose any of those, to be honest. I mean, with all the respect to Gazza and to Abel, I'd rather keep it private. It's more within the football world rather than going to the Toffees, because they might think completely different of them after that. Well, I tell you one funny story about Gazza when he was actually going fishing in the morning, and he would come back with a fish and he would put it into the trunk of one of the massage people. I think it was Jimmy.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And the car started to smell and smelled even worse and smelled even worse, but they couldn't find the origin of the smell. So I am not quite sure, but I think he had to sell his car just because the car was smelling and they couldn't find it. And Gazza didn't tell him nothing for 2 weeks. So he only told him when it was too late.
He sold the car and then he told him.
Yeah, it was hiding under the spare tire, so obviously nobody would look over there for the source of that smell in the car. But it was funny. I thought it was funny at that time. I mean, I'm sure not everybody thought it was funny, but for me it was.
It must have been great being part of that squad. Of course, it was quite a strong character filled squad. Really, it was the likes of David Unsworth, David Weir, like.
Alan Stubbs was there as well, and he was also one tough character. You know, I think we had a very good group. I mean, we used to come quite early in the morning for the training sessions because we had a ping pong table set up in our warming up gym, and we would have battles of ping pong. And believe it or not, Gazza was probably the best ping pong player you ever encounter. He would be standing there and just killing it all. I mean, we know how great Gaza was and how technical he was and how great a ball fanatic he was. So, I really couldn't believe it that somebody who slept, let's say, 5 hours a day, that he could still manage to see that tiny little ball flying with that speed and beat everybody else around the table, which was, it was really, really fun to see.
Yeah, that's a very interesting story, actually. I'd never imagined Gaza was that good at ping pong.
Well, he was phenomenal. He was not good. I think if you practiced a little bit more, he would have been like joined with the national team of probably England. I don't know. I don't know the level, but it seemed like he was fantastic. So
it's a very interesting one. We do have one story to ask you about, of course. We spoke with Alan Myers, who you might remember from your time at Everton, and he told us to say a warm hello to you, by the way. And also ask you about your first morning at the Choco training camp in Italy, where they asked you to go swimming and you refused until Archie Knox changed your mind. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about that, if you can remember, of course?
Well, I do remember because, I came from a kind of a different mentality. Football at Anderlecht, you know, we kind of could do pretty much what we wanted during the course of the week, as long as we were ready at the end of the weekend and you know, just play and win. That was pretty much what we needed to do. I just remember I signed for Everton. I had to fly out to Italy to the training camp, and I arrived quite late. I mean, it was almost dark, so I think the only moment I saw everybody was when they were leaving the dinner table. So for me was quite a late night, and then early morning we got woken up at I'm not sure anymore, but it was just barely light, so it was cold outside, and there was a swimming pool, and the swimming pool was not heated, and again I was not used to that, so then Archie was telling everybody, okay guys, for you morning wake up call, you're jumping in, doing a few runs, and you you're ready to go for your run, for your jog. I was like, I put my big toe in the water and it was too cold. And I said, nah, that's not for me. But it's just because obviously I was still on my Anderlecht, time and my Anderlecht routine, rather than knowing what Archie Knox is like.
And what is he like?
Obviously, maybe not half an hour, 15 minutes later, he did change my mind. I did jump in. I froze my bollocks off. And I had to do it every day since it was really the funnest memory of my first training at Everton. But it's a memorable one, which you know, 20 years later, I still remember, which counts
for pretty vivid.
Sorry?
It was a pretty vivid memory. You remember it very well.
Yeah, I do remember it very well, because obviously I was like, what the heck is this guy doing saying no to Archie Knox? And I was like, I didn't know who that was at that time, so I was thinking, okay, I take my chances.
Clearly, it didn't take long to change it, though.
You need to do whatever the coach is asking. So, you know, thinking about it afterwards, it made sense. I mean, everybody's going in. What makes you so special? You're not going to go in, and it's your new club. So just go with the program and just you know, do your bit. And don't do stupid things. The guys are going to look at you differently if you start doing stupid things from the very first day. So
you got involved, but of course, towards the end of that season, Walter Schmidt was sacked, and we'd only won once in 13 league games. Of course, you say you were injured for a large period of that. We were just 1 point above relegation, and David Moyes came in and steered us clear. How did you feel after Walter was sacked with Moyes coming in? Of course, Walter was the man who signed you, but what difference was there between Walter and David?
It is a long time now. And to be perfectly honest, the first few months at Everton were, you know, it's an adjustment period. You're coming from the Belgium league. It doesn't matter which league you're playing. You're going to the Premier League, and you need a few months to adjust to not only the speed and the tempo of the game, but also the mentality, how you approach the game, what you have to do, the tactical part, the technical part. It really takes a lot out of you if you're not born in the UK, you know, it's completely different to what we know, to what I've known from Canada, from Belgium. So by the time you actually get into the line of training and the way you have to play and you have to train, well, the time of Walter Schmidt was over. So it was quite short for me. For me, it was still a huge learning process during that time. And then when David Moyes came, I do remember that there was coming straight from my injury almost too. And then the intensity at the training was slightly different. And we were doing way more work tactically as well. So, you know, the trainings were finished and we would have to stay on the pitch for another half an hour, sometimes to an hour, to actually do your tactics, set pieces, where to run at what time. So in that aspect, I think we were better prepared for the Premier League with David Moyes, because everybody actually knew perfectly his position at any given moment, rather than maybe only certain situations with Walter Schmidt. But again, I'm not gonna say that Walter had bad trainings or in any way. It's just maybe the information that was coming to me at that time was just too much to handle for me, and I do not remember every single training session at that time. And when David Moyes came, maybe I was already adjusting to the Premier League life, and it was kind of getting easier to perform on a pitch, and then you taking more care of your trainings as well.
Well, we'll move on to your adjustments. You clearly were adjusting very well, because the second season was David's first full season, and it was a much more successful season where we finished seventh. Moyes was doing a decent job at this stage, and you scored 11 goals this season and was our top scorer in the league. I've got a few moments for us to look back on from that year where you clearly made your mark. First of all, the Arsenal game. Your goal sadly gets forgotten about a little bit because of the one Wayne Rooney scored. But yours was also a very good goal, and it helped us go on and beat an Arsenal team who were unbeaten until that point that season, and of course went the next season completely unbeaten. So a very enjoyable day for us, and you certainly played your part. Do you remember that game well?
I don't remember that game well. Like you said, I do remember Wayne's goal. I do remember my goal, of course, as well. But, you know, everything has been overshadowed by Wayne's goal. I mean, he's 16. Seaman has his long ponytail. He wants to cut off right after that game, you know. But his goal, Wayne's goal, was amazing. Mine was a little bit lucky. It's just because it went through a wall of players. I have no idea how it went through, because I shot from just outside the penalty box, I believe, and there was like, I'm guessing, 8 to 10 bodies in a way, and it's just like everybody starts to walk away, and it just hits the middle of the net. So it was very strange that it went in. But it did go in, and it was, I think at that moment it was 1-1. Then I got swapped. Wayne came in the last 15 minutes, I believe, and then he makes this magic goal from way outside the box, which was for me a goal of the season at that time anyways. So yeah, it was you know, anytime you beat the top team in the Premier League, and Arsenal was at that time the top of the bunch, you know, it's a memorable time, and Arsenal was a good team for me to play against. I scored quite a few goals against Arsenal, so I will not forget those goals quite easy. So, this one was not the nicest, but it counted nevertheless.
I actually thought it was quite a good goal. You took a bouncing ball and then smashed it in, if I remember rightly. I really enjoy watching that one back, to be honest.
Well, cool. Thank you.
Of course, we've got to mention Wayne. What was it like playing alongside him, training alongside him? Obviously, he had bags of talent at a very young age, didn't he?
Yeah, it was very strange. I mean, the first time he came to the training sessions, I had no idea that Wayne was only 16. I mean, he looked so much more mature. I'm not going to say older, because that would be an insult, but he looked mature for his age. And definitely when you saw him with the ball and what he was doing in training, it was impressive, to say the least, just because he was only 16, and the skills were on the level of somebody who was, well, playing the game already for the last 10 years on the highest level. So it was fun to watch. It was really, really fun to watch. And I will not be lying if I tell you that his skills at training were outperforming whatever he was showing on the pitch for the first 6 months for Everton. Because the trainings, I think he was more relaxed and he would dare to do more things at training. And then when he came to the games, I'm guessing the time and maybe also the idea of having a full stadium behind him or against him at that time, you know, would be maybe too much for a young 16-year-old. But the training sessions were amazing. He was later on in his career, he was showing whatever he was showing at training at that time. He was obviously executing it at the football pitch, on the pitch. But the first 6 months of training were unbelievable. You're thinking, oh my God, how do you even think about what she's doing? And yeah, well, later on, you know, he showed everybody that he could do it on the pitch as well. So yeah, it was amazing to watch him, and I was really happy to see him grow to this international famous player. And I was very fortunate to see his beginning of his career and then play alongside him during a few games as well.
Yeah, it was for us a great time to see him come through, and of course at the same time see you score a lot of crucial goals. It was a pretty decent team we had that season, and I've got a bit of a random question about that season. Okay. Two players that are remembered just by the weird reason that they signed. Do you remember much about Li Tier or Li Weifeng from your time at the club?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I don't know if it was a rumor or not, but not Li Tier, but the other, Li Weifeng. I heard he was playing for the national team for Chinese ping pong. Decent player, you know. I don't think he was bad at all. And knowing the big following out of China, I think it was a very smart move for the commercial reason for Everton. Having 10 million followers just for one player, I think put Everton also on the map in the Chinese market. And I believe that Bill Kenwright was thinking also about making Everton a bigger, better team. And the only way to do that is to generate some funds and some money. And the way to do that was the Chinese market at that time. So as strange as it might sound, Li Tai was not the worst player in the world. He was quite decent. He was very, very technical. And I think he played quite a few games for us. And I believe he also gave a few assists for me. So for me, he was a good player. And from a commercial point of view, I think it was not a bad signing. So, you know, strange as it may seem, I think it was a good sign for Everton.
I think Li Tier certainly was. I do remember seeing him put on some pretty decent displays that season, and of course I think linked up well with the likes of you and Kev in front of him. But I don't recall seeing a lot of Li Weifeng playing, which was, of course, they were both internationals. I saw them play at the World Cup the year before with China, but not a lot with Everton. So it was quite an interesting one. I think it was one that the fans were very interested to get to know a bit more about those guys, and obviously we didn't really see too much of them.
Well, you can't forget that the Premier League is a very tough competition, and you do sign anywhere between 25 and 35 players. Now, he was a defender as well, and to get a place in a defence in the Premier League is not that simple. You need some experience, and the only way to get the experience is if you're actually head and shoulders above the players who have been already in the heart of the defence for Everton. And I think David Weird was at that time, and he had bags of experience, and Alan Stubbs were there as well. So if you have to replace those players, well, then you must be really exceptional. And if you're not exceptional, then you might never get your chance. So you can also put only 16 players on the bench. Now, looking at the squad that we had at that time, I mean, I would not have picked him above any of those two players that we had in the center of the central defense. So, yeah, it's a tough one. You get your chance, you have to take it. But if you don't get your chance, well, then you might never really get it. So, again, anywhere between 25 and 35 players, and that was the time of the year 2000 to 2005. I believe some clubs right now, they have more than 40 players. So it's not going to be unusual to sign players and actually never see them on the pitch. It's just the coaches, they have to make a choice, and only the strongest survive is one of those unfortunate I don't know if it's unfortunate, actually it's a good deal, because the best players go on a pitch according to the GAFA and he makes the selection. So you're better, you're gonna play. If you're not better, do something that's gonna make you special and make the GAFA put you in a team. Simple as that.
Well, that's it, yeah. And of course, on that note with those two players, we talked, there was a game on New Year's Day, I think it was 2003, and it was the most watched game at the time in China, as we took on Manchester City. Li Tia played for us and Sun Ji Hai played for Man City. We were losing 2-1 and you scored in the last minute to make it 2-2. So
yeah, I'm never gonna forget that, because it's the first time I had to spend New Year's in the hotel room. You know, it was I mean, as nice as it is for the fans and as beautiful as it is for everybody else, I mean, it's a pain in the ass to sit in your hotel room, tick-tack, okay, Happy New Year to myself. You know, FaceTime you, WhatsApps and your Skypes and whatever. I don't think it existed back then
yet.
Or maybe just. So, the only thing you could do is just call somebody to wish him a Happy New Year. It was a little bit surreal, eating your lunch at 8 a.m. So you're waking up, instead of having breakfast, you're having your pasta with your chicken and getting ready for a noon kickoff at Man City. And yeah, I do remember that goal. Schmeichel was in goal, and there was a very, very, I don't know if it's a beautiful ball or how can you describe it, from Steve Watson, I think. It was Steve Watson.
Yeah.
A very long ball, and I think Schmeichel came to just wrap it up, and me with my speed, I think I just nicked it with my left hair somewhere from around here, and just steered it away just above his shoulder, and 2-2 last minutes. That was the only way I saved my New Year, you know, by scoring that goal and by actually getting a point at Man City. If we would have lost there, then it would have been a waste of time to go to a hotel and not celebrate the New Year. But this made it all good, and the year started with on a good note again.
It certainly did, and obviously we move on to the next one. The next game I was going to bring up was the game in February, the Southampton game. What a mad game that was! Your goals were crucial at the time. We were pushing for Europe. What do you remember of that game and the goals?
Well, what I remember of that game is that I think we should have scored about 15, well, not 15, but let's say we should have scored at least 10 goals that game.
Definitely.
And we haven't. And then Southampton, they came probably one time closer to our goal and they scored. And then it's quite difficult, to make it. I rarely score a goal with a head, but I think it was a cross from Wayne Rooney who set up the 1-1. The second one was amazing. But if I remember correctly, I had the exact same thing hitting the post a few minutes before. So it wasn't a fluke. I was really aiming for that corner.
You definitely were.
The second one was amazing. Years later, I was speaking about it because Antignani was a keeper at Fulham years later, and so we did talk about it, and he says, "What the hell?" He was like, "If you're gonna try it 10 more times, you're never gonna score that goal." And I say, "Come on, I aim for the post the first time, just to put the marker on, and the second time I just wanted to put in the corner, made it look nice." So and then we had a big laugh, but it was a really nice goal, and obviously the emotions after that goal were high. I went a little bit mental. I usually don't celebrate a goal like this, but this time. I give it a full wow, the lion's roar.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because this was actually the first ever Everton game I watched live, and of course the very late winning goal, the celebrations. From then on, I've always been a mad fan of Everton. So for me personally, Thomas, I owe you a lot for what you did that day.
Well, excellent. I could make another fan, another toffee on that day.
Well, that's it. Yeah, I was very young. I think it was 6, maybe 7 at the time. So I've a lot of fond memories of looking back. That was the first game I watched live, and it was obviously it was all. I've never really looked back since then. So thank you so much.
Cool. You're welcome.
Thank you. Of course, there was a lot of competition up front at the time for Everton with the likes of Dunk, Kevin Campbell, Chadwick, Wayne Rooney and Brian McBride as well for a spell. How did you find that kind of big competition up front?
Well, to be honest, if the more competition you have, it's usually the better for the striker. It's just because it keeps you on your toes. I think the minimum of strikers you should have in a team is 4. I think the maximum should be 6. Just because you don't want to oversaturate that area, you should do your scouting first, and then just make sure you have different type of strikers. And I believe with the 6 names that you just mentioned, we had the variety. You know, we had the length, we had the power, we had the speed, we had the combination of them both, of all of it as well. And we had Captain America, who was the most professional professional guy that I probably ever encountered in football. I mean, he would be working not only on the pitch but off the pitch twice as hard as anybody else, which was very, very nice to see. And at that time, obviously, it would be something very special because not everybody would do the extras that the extra mile that Brian McBride did. So it was it was very interesting to actually see the different characters and different ways of approaching the training sessions and how they can perform later on based on whatever they have done in the training during the week. So the more strikers usually translates into more competition, which should translate into more goals. I think that was a bonus for us at that time.
Yeah, it was a very short spell for Brian at Everton, but he certainly remembered very well by our fans. And I think he paired up really well with you. And of course, he's paired up again at Fulham later on as well, didn't you?
Yeah. It was like I said, I've never seen anybody working as hard on and off the pitch as Brian McBride, which made me rethink the way I was training as well. Obviously, with the experience, the older you get, the better you take care of your body, the more you start working on and off the pitch with certain things, just to make sure that you stay injury free. And strangely, the older I got, the less injured I became. It's probably down due to the way of training for myself as well later on in my career. I wish I maybe met Brian a little bit earlier in my career. Maybe I would have had less injuries. But then again, having the fibers in my muscles, the way I used to have, the sprinters' muscles, was quite difficult to keep me away from little injuries. It's just because I was so explosive that I was more of a sprinter kind than a football kind, which made my muscles a little bit more stiffen up. So any little tweak or any little discomfort, I should normally stop with training and stop with the game. But obviously, in football, it's not that easy. You have 90 minutes on a pitch. You have to prepare. So I did work later on in my career on becoming a little bit less injury prone and made it through a few seasons without any kind of injuries, which was nice to see. But at the time when you were young and you still in your prime, then it's quite difficult to hold yourself back and not wanting to play. Sometimes sometimes would be at the time where the coach David Moyes would come and would say, "How are you feeling?" Even though you felt not 100%, but you want to play so badly that you would tell him, "Yeah, everything is perfect." It's a little bit selfish in a way because there's other strikers who could maybe do the job a little bit better than you because they were 100% and not injured. But you just want to do the job for the team, and especially when you're sitting on top of the league, and you just want to push yourself because, well, like you said, 11 goals. Yeah, 11 goals that second season, and then through stupidity at training, I get injured again and I miss the last 7 or 8 or 10 games end of the season. And it's just because you think you're invincible. You have 11 goals and you're thinking about, maybe 15, maybe getting close to 20 this season, which would be fantastic for myself and for the club, and then definitely send us into Europe that year. And then, you know, one stupid movement in training, and then you're out for the season. And it's just stuff like this would not happen when I was, let's say, 30 plus, because you learn to you learn your body, the way it responds to different things. And I wouldn't let it get injured rather than, you know, it's going to be okay. So a few mistakes you make over the years that I would have made if I knew a little bit better, and that'd be maybe a little bit more professional. But this is the experience. It comes with the experience, and it's just too bad the experience is not right away at the age of 18, 19, where you can take it through your career, because that would be phenomenal. But unfortunately, it's not. So you learn every day.
Certainly, and of course, it was a real shame to lose you to injury towards the end of that season. We dropped out of the European places, and despite that, it was still a much better season than the previous. But moving on to the final season, it was pretty eventful, and obviously it was a very disappointing season for us. We finished very low in the table, and you still managed 8 goals, by the way, which is pretty decent considering how poorly we were playing. But of course, we have to move on to the end of that season when we had the contract dispute and you put in a transfer request. I remember you saying in Everton's official programme in 2018, you said you deeply regretted the way you went about the transfer request and that you'd have done things a bit differently if you'd have had the chance again. In that piece, you were actually quoted saying, "I wanted to stay longer. The anger took over, and without thinking about it and going back and trying to negotiate, this stupid thing came out." And I know a lot of our fans were very upset by the way you left, myself included. So it's an opportunity, really, to maybe set the story straight about what happened in 2004. What do you remember from it? It was about the contract, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was with David Moyes. It was, again, I don't blame David. I mean, whatever it was, he has lots on his plates, and he has to look for the best possible team that he can build for the next seasons to come. And In my case, we ended up not playing very well that season. But like you said, you know, 8 goals, and here and there, I became the player of the season for many of the Everton fan groups. So I came to David Moyes with a question. You know, one season left to go on my contract, and I would like to stay. I would like an extension. And what did happen is he would extend my contract for just one season. And I'm thinking, well, if it's going to be only one season, I'm going to be in the same boat the next year. So I said, look, I don't want stupid, crazy. You know, I'm very happy with what I have here at Everton. The only thing I need is 2 years to actually put my mind at ease, and I can really focus on my career further on. And maybe, you know, I would be then 32. Maybe even stay later on here at the club, because you never know. You know, Premier League career doesn't last that long, especially for foreign players, you know. So at 32, I'm thinking, you know, if I can have next year plus 2 extra, that's going to be 3 years of staying longer at Everton, would have been a fantastic. And well, no matter how you turned, it was only one coming on the table, and like I said, it's the sometimes the anger, the experience about getting about business and business time. You know, I was dealing with these matters myself. That you know, the anger takes over, and then you say some things like, you know, I think Wayne should go to a bigger club, or to a better club, or whatever it was. It was silly. I mean, at the end of the day, United, which was the biggest club in the world at that time, but maybe I should have just a great time, and it's time to move on, and just put it down on a table differently rather than the way I did. Yeah, you were 27, 28, 30. Sometimes you make mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. And that was one of the big mistakes in my career, because I love my time there. And I regret saying these things. And it's just too bad it happened. I would have done it differently right now. Simple as that. But I can't take it away anymore. I mean, it's been said, so it's there on the table. Everybody will remember this. So if I can take my hats off to and apologize to all the Toffee fans, I will. So sorry about that. I know it's maybe means nothing right now. It's 15 years later, but yeah, I still have my shirt. You know, I love this.
Class one, that one.
I will not give it away for any money because it's part of me. It's part of who I was, who I grew up with, and I have not only this one. I even have the one with the 1-1 season as well. 1-1.
Yeah.
And I have a yellow shirt. I have a black shirt with the black. I know it's not the Toffee blue, but I still love it. So I have all my Everton shirts from every single year, and I'm not gonna. I'm a part of them, you know. My daughters need to know the heritage of the dad when they grow a little bit older. Like I said, it's I had really fantastic years at Everton. So the way, you know, the way everything ended, I wish it would have happened differently. You know, when you think about it, unfortunately, it doesn't matter what age you are, people do make mistakes and say stupid things. It ended up like this for me. It was really too. I really had too good of a time. Over there at Liverpool, in Liverpool, and at Goodison Park, to finish it like this. But like I say, people do make mistakes, and that was one of the biggest ones that I have made. So sorry about that. I know it's not much now, 15 years later, but you know, hopefully it's gonna clear stuff up, and it really was not meant like this. I rather would have left on good terms and probably just you know, say the time has come for me to move on and that's it. But I guess the being upset of not getting the second year added on to my contract made my head a little crazy, and all strikers need to be a little bit crazy to perform well on a pitch. A little bit like the goalkeeper.
Well, he certainly performed well in that second season. I think that's the season we always seem to remember you by, which suggests that you have left a good legacy at Everton. Certainly that season, like I say, it's given me one of my first ever memories of Everton. So I've got a lot to, I owe you a lot for that, basically. And of course, you did move on to Fulham for £1.7 million in July 2004. Earlier that month, you did suggest the reason for leaving was that you thought Everton were going to be in a relegation battle the next season. How did you feel seeing Everton finishing the top four the following year? Presumably, you were quite surprised, because I know we were.
I don't think this is things that I actually said. Most of the interviews, when they are done and they are done on paper, you know, there are some opinions of the journalists that they just added a few things, and I would never say that Everton would be in a relegation battle, because I am not that kind of person who likes to put more negativity when I leave. So I wouldn't do that. But again, people are trying. Whatever is said in the papers, they always add a few things. If it's not on tape, and this is something that I learned later on, that I was very serious later on. I have become so paranoid as well that I was recording all my interviews just to have a proof of what I did say or did not say, because I was quite careful with my words towards the end of my career, and I just wanted to make sure that they cannot take me on any words that I might have said or hinted towards. So you know, lesson learned again, and it's just too bad. Like I said, I wish the experience of all your career comes at the age of 18 rather than at the age of 30, because sometimes at the age of 30 might already be too late. So but you learn every day, whether or not it's life, football, interviews, choosing your friends, choosing your enemies. It's just you know, life lessons. So you learn every day, and hopefully you do learn from your mistakes, and I believe I have done that.
That's great to hear, mate. I'm really pleased to hear that, because obviously the feeling around that, it was particularly that article that hurt the fans more than anything, like the request or anything. You wouldn't have been the first to hand the transfer request in, but to hear that come from you is really pleasing to hear. And obviously, I think as fans, we are quite cynical towards the mainstream press these days, so maybe we wouldn't have believed what we read the way maybe we did back in 2004. So it's really pleasing to hear that, and it's good to see that you've clearly, like, you're really showing that you have learned a lot from your mistakes. You seem to be living your best life, like, moving forward now, obviously, with 16 years on from when you left the club. I think the attitudes, particularly with the age of social media, I think the fans nowadays are a lot more cynical towards the press, and maybe if they were the way they were now, we might not have believed everything we read back then when that article was published. So it's interesting to hear you give your side of the story, and I'd like to believe, like, that it was the newspapers that did it, and I'm well inclined to believe it given the nature of the English press. So it's brilliant to hear that you have still, you've sort of moved forward from what happened in 2004, and that you certainly have started rebuilding bridges with the fans. I've heard you were seen at a couple of Everton games, weren't you?
Yeah, you know what? I've been to Liverpool only twice since I left. Reason being is, like, you know, players have moved on somewhere. So if I'm in the neighborhood of Manchester, just maybe to visit somebody there, well, I will definitely do the trip and go to Everton. And if there's a game, I definitely go and visit and see one. So the latest one, it's already, well, a year and a half ago against Huddersfield. And we won that game as well. So I believe that was the game where David Unsworth was a gaffer. If I don't,
it may well have been. Yeah,
it may well. Yeah, I think it was one of his first games, and we won 2-1 or 2-0 that game.
2-0,
so,
yeah, I think I remember.
Yeah,
that game.
So yes. So I like to come back, you know, and I like to see the Goodison Park again from a different perspective than from the pitch as well. This time I was sitting right behind the goal, so it was an experience that I've never encountered before, because I've never sat behind the goal, even when I was injured. You know, I was always somewhere on the side the side, but back of the goal I've never been. So people were still very nice, you know. I even without a parking ticket, they have let me drive pretty much all the way to the stadium, and I could have parked right next to Goodison Park, which was amazing to see. I mean, I don't know who the people were who were letting me through, but it was like, oh yeah, yeah, of course, just, you know, come in and park, no problem. So it was amazing to see that you know, even after all those years, you're still being recognized and part of the Toffees community. So it was really, really nice. It was amazing to know that there are still big blue hearts over there that care for the stupid little Canadian who comes back and watch one game.
Well, to be fair, you've left a much better legacy than you're giving yourself credit for. To be fair, that 2002-03 season still remembered really, really well by us fans, and of course by me. It was my first season watching Everton, so a lot of good memories. So we're going to finish off now with a few quick questions. Thomas, first of all, who's the best player you played with at Everton? This might be a bit of a silly question.
Well, there would have to be two. It's definitely Gaza on the top of my list. The skill level of this man at that time, it was just, well, it's incredible. I mean, when he was up for it, it was out of this world. And then, well, it had to be Wayne, just because of this, of the age and what he was showing at the training. It would be two of the most brilliant footballers probably I've encountered. Point.
Yes. I think they're probably the names that would probably show up when most people would ask who was the best who played alongside you as well. So I don't think we can argue with that. So do you still watch Everton or keep an eye on how we're doing, even if you don't always get to the games?
Right, you know, all the teams I played for, I mean, I always keep an eye out. But especially with Everton, I do TV commentary here in Belgium, and most of the time it's if there is an Everton game, and especially when there is a derby being televised live against Liverpool. So Everton, Liverpool, Liverpool, Everton. That's where I'm the studio guest here in Belgium, and that's when I definitely watch the Everton game.
Yeah, you know, it's not really the best time to be watching at the moment. We haven't done too well in the last few years, so surely, hopefully, they'll get you on for a few other games and some games we actually win.
Yeah, well, you know, you had Lukaku in your ranks and Miralas and two Belgians that play for Everton as well. So it's been televised here quite a few times just because of the Belgian contingents, you know. Same with City and Chelsea at the time when Hazard and Courtois and De Bruyne were playing. So we've seen quite a few games, and especially when the Belgian boys play against each other. So that meant Everton City, Everton Chelsea. You know, the games are always on. So I'm definitely following it quite a lot.
And what's your best memory of playing for Everton?
Well, it's probably the same memory like you have. Your first game, it's just because it was such a crazy game that we you know, like I told you, we should have won probably 10-1 that game, and we barely won 2-1. But those two goals in the last 10 minutes of the game, coming from my foot in my head, you know, it just got stuck. It's just because the first one is, I rarely score with a head. And here I jumped higher than anybody else. So, and I scored, and the second goal was one of those where you don't really make them every week. You make them once a season at best. So, yeah, it was definitely one of those memories I will keep cherishing.
Definitely. And finally, before we finish, do you have a final message that you want to say to the Everton fans watching about your time at the club?
Well, listen, I really had a fantastic time there at Everton, and I will do my part of coming more often to the games, maybe reconnect with the fans, speak with the Everton press, maybe give one or another kickoff. I still have a connection with Darren Griffith, who is at the media centre at Everton, and he actually did ask me a few months ago to come to Everton and do something there. Again, I'm not 100% sure how I'm being received at Everton, so this is probably something that does keep me a little bit back. I hope the 15 years has healed some wounds, but what I do want to say is I really had a fantastic time, and I would love to come back and just see the Goodison Park again from the center circle again, kind of like giving a kickoff, because that's it just gives me goosebumps every single time I think about it. Atmosphere is great. Stadium is not the youngest anymore, but it still has an atmosphere of a really football temple. So hopefully, you know, this season is going to be finished. You never know when, but hopefully, you know, with the new coach that you guys said for the last few months, and Duncan Ferguson helping him out on the sidelines, there is a still connection for me. You know, I still I spoke to Lukaku a few months ago, and he still told me that you know, all the Jimmies, the masseur and the kitman, they are still working there.
Yeah,
which is great to know. I don't know whether or not Sue is still working at the reception. That'd be fantastic to see her again, see the new training ground of the of Everton, Inchon, because this is something I just missed. So I have not been there. You know, just make a trip, make it a day out, or even a weekend at Everton. So I've been to Liverpool, I think 3 years ago now, when there was a book that came out about Liverpool and Everton together. You know, I've been there as well, but I've never made it to the game. It's just different timing. So I just hope I can watch more games live, because watching live games is way better than watching it on telly, especially coming here from Belgium. Is better to just fly one time to Liverpool It's so easy. It's only an hour away. So I wish I can go there one time and meet you all again.
That'd be great to see you again. So there you have it, guys. 101 appearances, 26 goals, lots of ups and downs, lessons learned, and most of all, still a lot of affection for the Blues. That's Thomas Radzinski, ladies and gentlemen. A brilliant chat, and hopefully not the last time we see you here on the Toffee Blues, Thomas.
Well, I hope so too. Well, let's keep the good work, guys, and really Everton is doing great the last 15 years, 20 years since I've been there. So hopefully they play more Champions League and more European football. It'll be fantastic for the Toffees.
That's definitely what we're hoping for as well, Thomas. And it'd be great to see you back at Goodison again to maybe see a few of those games if we get there.
You definitely will. Thanks a lot.
Brilliant. So this is the end of our show. As always, to our viewers, get involved. Let us know your memories of Thomas as an Everton player, your favourite goals, perhaps. Of course, if you enjoyed the show, give the vid a like. And if you want to be more, seeing more great content, subscribe to the Toffee Blues YouTube channel and also give us a follow on Twitter at Everton Newsfeed. All that's left for me to say really is thank you so much to Thomas Radzinski for joining me on the show today.
You're welcome, James. Good luck.
It's been an absolute pleasure. And of course, thank you guys for watching on the Toffee Blues.